I was a teenager, I got started doing entertainment and performing and everything by like essentially f***ing off at school and then taking a bus out to like every event that I was interested in and just finding the person in charge and saying, I will work for you for free if I can be a part of this. And they let me. It's like, oh, you're just some teenager who will offer me free help. Yeah, I'm not going to say no to that. So every event is just like, yeah, you literally just showed up to see if you can help me put chairs out and like pass out flyers. And that's how I got started. I started at a thing called Fright Night in North Hollywood at a place called the California Institute for Abnormal Arts is what it was called. And I just assisted the guy there by like passing out flyers to every horror and goth shop in LA and then helping put out chairs to the event. And that's like where I started meeting people. And that's the butterfly effect that got me where I am now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the super spooky episode of Delulu Canoe. We are haunting you this week with an exciting episode as we float down the river. Did you like that? Did that tickle your ear?
I'm terrified of rivers. Any moving water, really, absolutely horrifying.
Really?
No.
Oh no. Okay.
But it's spooky season, so yes.
Yes, very spooky.
Spooky running water.
Right? Yes, it's terrifying. Joining us today in the canoe, we have Morgana.
Hello.
Thank you for being our spooky guest.
Ooh, I am very spooky, aren't I? I'm always spooky with like a twist of comedy. That's been my MO for so long, is that I'm comedy adjacent horror in so many different ways. It's always comedy, but it's involving something spooky, doing things that aren't so spooky. That's usually it. It's just like spooky with a twist.
Oh, hell yeah. We love that.
We love that.
Speaking of spooky, we also have Cosmo from the Cosmo Network joining us as well.
Looking fresh today, Cosmo.
Thank you. Wow. I went to Prodigy Island for like, you know, a little vacation. I came back with a souvenir, so awesome.
I love it. God, people know how to accessorize these days.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Really? Definitely.
Smooth.
You feeling okay? Good. You feeling good?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. It's just helping me breathe, and it has like something, you know, it's fine. It's like a breathing apparatus. They say it will fall off in about five minutes or something like that. So
that's good. I love that. We're getting very close to an M-Preg moment. Anyway, moving on from that. That is not
moving on.
Yeah,
back to you.
Of course.
How
yes,
are you doing?
I am great. I just got back from Edmonton Expo in Canada, and then before that, I was at a billion other conventions with Hellaverse, and we premiered a new project I'm in with my Hell the Boss castmate Brandon Rogers called A Night at the Park. Ooh. Which is incredible. It's like a billion of his characters, and one of the ones I play with him named Villanexia, who makes an appearance in this. And it is about like 27 minutes of chaotic madness.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
We all almost killed ourselves over making, like usual. That's you know, we sacrifice for our art.
It's art, yeah. Anytime you're like pouring all of you into something, whether it's like crazy, delusional, it takes a piece of you in the best way.
And we wouldn't have it any other way. Look, if we weren't willing to absolutely do the most masochistic shit to ourselves in order to make our art, are we even really artists? What are we even doing here?
Right.
If we're not willing to come to the brink of death to bring people comedy.
It's so true. That is comedy.
That is comedy.
It's like tragedy.
Almost dying is very funny.
Yeah.
Dying actually is only sometimes funny, but coming close to it, hilarious.
Mm. It's just part of the show, yeah. You know? But you have literally been everywhere and nowhere.
I've invented new hours in the day.
I've
realized that it's only 24 hours if you acknowledge that it's 24 hours. A day can be any hours you want. I mean, who's going to stop you?
No one.
So yeah, I mean, it's been a combination. Like, this year has been crazy because it's all the conventions plus, you know, voicing Sally Mae on Hell of a Boss and doing things with her. I'm in Dandadan voicing Naki Kido in season 2 of that, doing a voice that absolutely tears my vocal cords to fucking shreds. and then a lot of different projects with Brandon, including like this one. What else? We did a sci-fi one called Don't Touch My Spacesuit that was great.
Ooh.
And then coming off of a series called Class Acts, which we did 8 episodes of.
I've seen, yes.
Good, you've seen that one. That's the one I tell everybody to go see, Class X. I'm proud of all my projects, but that one especially is very...
It's amazing.
Very, very close place in my heart for that one. I love that project and everyone I got to make it with, which is that usual ensemble that I've done all these other wonderful projects with.
And that's what makes them also worth it, is like when you're on a set with a really great cast, you'd give anything to go back and like relive those moments.
Oh yeah. And the fun thing about this is it's like I started acting with a theater company. So
you're
like
a theater kid.
I'm totally a theater kid. Yeah. Black box theater shit. So for me, it was like the passion in that was that you might be starring in the production that night, but before then you're driving the U-Haul to go pick up set pieces, you're nailing things down, you're painting stuff on the walls, you're standing on street corners passing out flyers. Like it's a similar vibe to Brandon's projects where like none of us are there for any other reason other than we want to make something.
Yeah.
And we'll do whatever it takes to like make stuff. We're grabbing equipment, we're holding lights for each other, boom mics for each other. Mm. We're like, you know, we're doing whatever we can to make the project happen. And then we come into these new clusters of characters together. Like, you know, Jensen Clement, who plays Elise in Class X. I've done 4 characters in projects with her where I'm like opposite her in a different way.
Yeah.
And it's always exciting. It's just like, okay, what new characters are we playing in the same scene together who have a dynamic?
Oh, that's so cool.
And Brandon and I, you know, we've played a lot of characters opposite each other. My typecast in Brandon's projects are usually character who fucking hates Brandon's character. I don't know what the deal with that is, but it's just like, yeah, no, my character is almost always very, very annoyed with whatever Brandon's character is doing. That's
amazing,
that's the MO,
though.
Essentially.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great.
And then on top of that, I just, you know, kind of in the theater company way, as the studio was growing, as Spindle Horse, the studio that does Hell of a Has-Been, was growing, it just got to a point where it went from a small studio into a big one that had a lot of other things that needed doing for it. So I just started taking on things that needed to be done that Viv reasonably had absolutely no time to do. And that ended up being leading merch and licensing for Spindle Horse and like getting to oversee the merchandise and partnerships like Hot Topic and working with the Hot Topic team every day. And I'm going to Japan in a couple weeks and I'm meeting with, like, you know, that's more of a vacation with my girlfriend, but I'm also getting to meet with like Japanese partners out there, like, you know, we've done deals with. So all things that I never in a million years would have expected 2 years ago when I was making the bills, delivering weed and doing online femdom work. You know, it's not that
That's
different,
great.
But it's close.
Yeah. I think one piece that you just gave us that is such a gem is talking about like the acting industry and how everybody helps each other out on your sets. I think there's this weird stereotype that people think acting is like very glamorous and you get this like big trailer and you know, it's really like glamorous for all the top one celebrities, when it's like, no, filmmaking out here is hard. It's being able to act in any scenario, any situation, whether you're hot, you're cold, you're hungry, you're tired. And
we steal a lot of our shots.
Yeah.
We go to places we're not allowed to film.
I love it.
We don't have permits.
Yes.
And we get the shots before the police are called. But we were in Griffith Park shooting at the old zoo at like 2 a.m. in the morning.
Ooh.
And we lit that thing up to be so cool looking for this shot and just like absolutely gorgeous. Meanwhile, we're at the benches. You know, we did it on a warm night because like I think the logic was, it's like, oh, it's nice and warm outside. So it's not going to be freezing. It's going to be somewhat comfortable. You know what else likes to be out on warm nights? Every bug you can imagine, including all the cockroaches, spiders, bees. I didn't know bees existed at night. I was unaware of this.
Really?
I thought they just, who the fuck sees a bee at night?
Wow.
And we didn't really put two and two together until my poor castmate was stung on the back by a bee during this.
No.
And then it's like, we have all of our stuff down. And then like by the end of it, and it's like, okay, before you take that back to your car, shake it out. It's probably full of spiders.
Yep.
That's the glitz and glamour of Hollywood life, you
filmmaking.
Know? So yeah, filmmaking, the magic of Hollywood.
Which really ties back to our beginning quote about like how you have to just like really love what you're doing in order to break your back for it. And I think people that live in LA, they get it. Cause like, especially right now where there's no work. There's nothing.
And it's, look, If people who think it's just like, I'm gonna go to LA and make it big, LA does not give a fuck about you.
Nope.
It is a city where it's just like, look, it's not gonna do you any favors, and mm-hmm. you only come here if you are ready to work your ass off and do whatever you takes only because you want it badly.
Yeah. Yep.
Don't come here thinking that the city owes you anything or it will treat you like shit.
Yep.
Come here because you wanna do something with a bunch of other people who wanna do something. It is an oversaturated town with a billion different people doing a billion different things, which means you can find what you're looking for
sure,
but you have to dig.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like there's any opportunity you can possibly want out here,
mm-hmm.
but you have to really want it to find it. And that's how I started in all of this. When I was a teenager, I got started doing entertainment and performing and everything by like essentially off at school and then taking a bus out to like every event that I was interested in,
mm-hmm.
and just finding the person in charge and saying, I will work for you for free if I can be a part of this.
Yep.
And they let me. It's like, oh, you're just some teenager who will offer me free help. I'm not gonna say no to that. So
hell yeah.
Every event is just like, yeah, you literally just showed up to see if you can help me put chairs out and like pass out flyers. And that's how I got started. I started at a thing called Fright Night in North Hollywood. California Institute for Abnormal Arts is what it was called. And I just assisted the guy there by like passing out flyers to every horror and goth shop in LA.
Wow.
And then helping put out chairs to the event. And that's like where I started meeting people. And that's the butterfly effect that got me where I am now.
Yep. That's
was
incredible.
Just being like, look, I so badly want to be a part of this,
mm-hmm.
that I will apprentice for every single person and make the connections and network to be able to be a part of this scene and contribute something to it. I don't know what that thing is yet, but it'll be something. I'll figure it out eventually.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like half the battle is just like wanting it bad enough and like really putting, what is it, like boots to the pavement is like the saying.
Yeah.
Where you're like willing to be out there and like be in the mess of it all just to kind of feel like you're part of it till you get to build your own thing, until you find your grounding and your network and your people to make what you want to make.
Yeah.
But we all start somewhere.
And it takes time. I mean, I think that I've been professionally doing this for like 13 years, but I feel like I really only found like the part of it I'm meant to do in the last like four.
Wow,
so it's like I was doing a lot of different parts of acting and performing and everything for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't regret any of it. I think it all like was those steps to get where I am now.
Yeah.
But it took that long to finally find like what I'm doing now. So, you know, longevity is key. Like that's the thing. It's like you really have to want it enough to stick with it, even if it's not the destination. It takes a while to reach whatever that destination
it's,
is.
It's a marathon triathlon, really, of LA.
Yeah.
Of like, you just can't come here and be like, all right, I'm fit, I'm ready to go. It's like, no, there's endurance involved with this. It's like longevity. It's like, how long are you willing to stick with it and keep up? Because they will make or break you. LA will make or break you.
Oh yeah, that's why there's not a single person I went to acting school with who's still doing it.
Exactly.
Wow, really?
No one's still doing it.
Whoa.
Like that's the thing. Like I think they all went into real estate or some bullshit like that.
Bet.
They all found it's just like, well, this sucks. I'm just gonna take a job that'll pay me well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you didn't want it enough. You thought that you can buy your way into like the networking things and the schmoozing. No one cares.
Yeah.
No one cares. And any of those events where it's just like, oh, you're paying money to come meet the stars and meet the big age. No one cares.
Yep.
No one cares.
Yeah.
You paid admission to this and you thought that was the easy access way, and that's why none of you are doing it anymore. You thought that was the shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, no, it's having to be in it for the right reasons, mm-hmm. and really, really wanting it. That's it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I imagine you've given that speech probably a lot on podcasts, right?
Relatively.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I mix it up a little bit.
Oh, of course. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. But I'm wondering, though, like, if we're going to get a little bit of unhinged, I'm excited to hear what your answer to this is going to be. But on our show, we have a lot of guests that frequently do podcasts or are at least talking about themselves in some sort of way, whether it's panels, podcasts, or they live stream. And typically, they kind of end up talking about the same things over and over again, and they don't get to just, like, let out whatever runs through their mind that makes them Delulu. So I'm dying to know, with all your energy, what is making you feel a little Delulu?
Listen, I am all about specific types of aesthetics and everything that I need to surround myself with.
Yeah.
And the aesthetic that I am obsessed with is cyberpunk aesthetics.
Okay. Yes!
Absolutely fucking obsessed with anything that is a cyberpunk, neon, dystopian sort of, like, I am an urban kid. I'm 100% a city kid. Mm-hmm. And ever since I was like the youngest fucking age, my dad's favorite movie is Blade Runner.
Hell yeah.
And
I saw Blade Runner for the first time when I was probably like 5-6 years old. That's when I'm like introduced to the sort of Sid Mead designed cyberpunk future aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And ever since then, like, I liked that gritty side of cyberpunk aesthetic way more than any of like the pristine and beautiful, mm-hmm. like, you know, like more Star Trek sci-fi. Like, yeah. The very gritty, like, city, street level cyberpunk mm-hmm. vibe.
Ooh.
I have always been obsessed with this. Like, when I move into a new place, the first thing that goes up are color changing LED strip lights.
Yes.
Everywhere. Yes. Everywhere. Yes.
I moved into my new place and I bought like 300 feet of those like spools of strip lights you buy on Amazon.
Yes.
And I'm like, the corner of every piece of molding on the ceiling, like underneath shelves, like everything needs to be covered so it can just be doused in cyber bisexual colored lighting everywhere.
Yes. I mean,
like, everything needs to be cyan and magenta glowing and reverberating. And I see you have one of the galaxy spacemen over there.
I do, yes.
I have one of those guys too, yes. constantly going in my room. Yep. So it's cyberpunk lighting on every grid in my room, and then that dude just works away casting mm-hmm. a nebula on the ceiling.
My room is like that too. That's the world I want to live in. It's the world I want to be in, with the prosthetics, the androids, the just the neon lights, the food courts, the rain, the cars, mm-hmm. like, better looking than the Cybertrucks, but like, literally, like,
I'll get into that too. Here's the whole thing about like the cyberpunk future aesthetic. It's like, there's several things that I love about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I love about the cityscapes is that it goes into a future, especially in like cyberpunk American society in which diversity is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many different types of people. It is like an ultimate melding pot mm-hmm. of just the world stage. And I love that because I think that's what this country is supposed to fucking be. It's supposed to be a blending of all of these different cultures and diversity and you know, just all these different ideas coming together. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like it creates like a hub. And I, you know, for better or for worse in that case, it's just like, I think that's what makes the world interesting
mm-hmm.
is seeing a blend of these cultures all sort of like offering something to the world stage.
Yeah.
That's what I loved so much about like Blade Runner is that it had like Asian influence, but not just one. Like, there was Japanese, Chinese, Korean, like all these different influences mixed with Western
mm-hmm.
aesthetics and, you know, like, you know, different outfits that had like a, you know, like something that was clearly based in an African sort of you know wardrobe and design. Like, they really just took like all these different world styles and imagined them all blended together and then shot out 100 years in the future.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just like, that's the future I want to live in. That is like, that's what makes the world interesting to me, because every single scene you just want to pause and look around. Like, that's a world you want to walk around and really take in.
Can I give you a suggestion? Go on YouTube and type in 3 hours of Blade Runner music.
Oh, and every time. Do you know how many times like I've just typed in cyberpunk lo-fi and just kicked back in bed and just let this synth wave wash over
with that
me.
Horn, with that saxophone, like in like the background, like distance, but you can hear it with the rain and then like something flying overhead and then like it's beautiful.
Yeah, no, I mean I've tried to describe like what my like favorite aesthetic of clothing is, and I can only describe it as whatever the sex workers in Blade Runner were wearing mm-hmm. had the best fashion sense I'd ever seen as a teenager.
Yeah.
I'm just like, looking at Triss, I'm just like, the makeup style, the teased out hair, like the fishnets, and, you know, again, all like the different mix of cyberpunk elements within it.
Yeah.
Obsessed with all of that.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, again, I had always dreamed of that future. And it only got worse in that obsession with things like Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, yeah.
Which best gaming experience yes. I've mm-hmm. ever had diving into that, because you really get to immerse yourself in Night City and everything that goes around that. Mm-hmm. I have way too much fun with that world.
Everything in that game is like livable. It's alive and accessible. It's not like just, it's a map. You can't go to that place. You can't go to that place. There's like interactions. It's like real world. It's like jacking in the Matrix and just going right straight in.
It is. Like, I need them. Yeah, I need more expansions. I need more in that game to do, because I just like, I just remember just being able to like play as my character, hop on a bike, like just design my cyberpunk self in that game and just be able to explore those streets on side missions and take in like just that entire aesthetic and atmosphere. And the shame is that like in a way we're getting exactly that, but in the worst way. That's the worst thing. It's just like, it's like you wish for a cyberpunk future on a monkey's paw. One finger like curls back, and it's just like, you do remember that every single one of these films had a villain who was a billionaire man child and who was like drunk on power. And like that's, it's just like every film had that. Every single one. Like the Weyland Yutani was like, you know, was like that. Blade Runner was like that. It's like you always have that type of person. There's always like the president is some sort of psychopath, fascist, religious zealot.
Back
like,
to the Future too.
Biff. I'm just like, damn it, I really like the aesthetic. I forgot everything that comes with that.
The good with the bad.
Same with Star Wars. You have the Emperor and the Empire and stuff like that. It's just but that
The aesthetic's great. It's just everything around that is terrible. And it's also, we're getting like the worst elements of that, where it's just like, okay, we do have cars that look like they're from Blade Runner, but those are the garbage trucks. It's just like you know what? I will hand it to him. I will hand it to Tesla. The Cybertruck absolutely looks like a car out of Cyberpunk 2077. Mm-hmm. The one you don't want.
Literally
the junker. It that is the you're Pinto. Forced to drive in one of those things.
It's the Pinto. Pinto.
It's like you picked the worst car to replicate in this future. It's just with it, looks like it's made of PS2 graphics. Atrocious. And then like, you know, we have AI now. And like, as a kid, like the idea of artificial intelligence and AI is like the coolest thing ever. It's just like, oh my god, I get like a robot buddy, and like the whole idea of AI is so cool. And you know, I love animes. Like, have you seen Psychopaths?
Oh my god.
Psychopaths is like high art. If you haven't seen it, you would love it.
You would love Psychopaths. You'll love it's like one season of the movie. The movie is like, doesn't really make sense, but the first season, I'm telling you,
is incredible.
And it's like a dystopian world where crime doesn't exist, but you are judged by this meter that's inside you. The gun reads you and see if you're redeemable to be going put in rehab.
It prejudges how likely you are to commit a crime. So it's just like they're called latent criminals. And again, way too many parallels to what we have going on right now with the government trying to like, you know, label certain people. I'm not looking at anybody. myself as the type of people that might be likely to commit a crime,
right?
And I trust you,
I'm in that same group too.
It's so great to be a minority in this country. But it is the entire aesthetic of that is amazing, but it's also comes with that sort of, you know, it's like, oh, there's the dark side of that as well. It's like who takes control in like a cyberpunk world. It's probably why every protagonist is always the rebel, the person standing up to the fascist authority. It's usually almost none of these cyberpunk movies have a great leader. It's almost always your street level revolutionary who's taking on some billionaire fascist almost every time. But the AI in that is very cool. It's like a cool helper robot you totally want. AI now, it's just like, how do we rip off Studio Ghibli artwork for a shitty meme? Or how does a certain billionaire, I guess, spend his time, I don't know, jerking off on X, and is trying to create a waifu that won't divorce him? It's just like, it's the lamest use of AI possible. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh man, it's like we have AI, but at what cost? It's so much lamer than it was supposed to be. This was all supposed to be cool. So
we're almost there with the cybernetics, like the body parts, like, you know, artificial legs and arms like that. So we're getting to be a cyber. I always thought that was interesting in those kind of worlds. It's like, I'm missing a whole left side, but I can get it replaced with robotic, like muscles, joints, grips,
that is the coolest thing ever. Yeah. I love that. Like do you know Angel by chance? She's like an actress who has a cybernetic arm. She has like a bionic prosthetic arm. And it's the coolest thing. She used to hang out at Fonco all the time.
Oh.
But like she did archery and like all kinds of things. And like she would go on talk shows showing off her like cool cybernetic arm. And it's only gotten more advanced over time. Mm-hmm. They can actually take them off now and control them when they're not even attached to them.
Oh, cool.
And it's like, that's the stuff. That is the cool shit there of like being able to modify yourselves in that sort of way. Like I would I would absolutely go for like cybernetic parts.
I would totally
go for that. You know, if it was something that would better my life in that way, like, you know, like you know, bionic eye that is able to like read things, or you know, whatever the case may be, I'm very attracted to the idea of like cybernetic enhancements.
Would never know any of this about you. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, well, look, I think it's like the times we're in right now are shit. Like there's a lot of shit in these times, but it's also, like, I don't think I would go backwards. I wouldn't say it's just like, yeah, it would be a better thing to, like, regress.
Yeah.
And there's so many people who, like, beg to regress. Like there's an entire side of this country who's like, oh, man, wouldn't it be so great if we went back 80 years? And I'm like,
no.
Yeah, I'm sure for some of you, yeah. I'm sure for a very specific type of some of you, I can see why that would be an advantage, but not so much for me. So I'm always looking for, like, okay, as dark as things are right now, they've always sucked in some sort of way. There's always been some asshole to fight against, but it does get better as the future progresses.
Mm-hmm.
Like progress progresses by the nature of what it is. So the future, no matter what it is bound to, you know, like
to keep going.
Progress will progress. Nothing can stop that.
Mm-hmm.
So, as long as we keep on fighting and not bow down and, you know, cower down.
Exactly.
And keep on fighting. And there's going to be wars. There's going to be a lot of casualties, but just look at back then with slavery to the Million Man March to having a black president. That's progress.
Like, you know? I try to think about it in the sense that, like, things were so dark before the civil rights movement happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally the worst fucking time where people were just like, no, we're fucked. All that progress is gone. We're never going back. It's just like, no, it got really, really bad before it got good again.
For sure.
So, you know, I think that looking at that sort of like future tech, cybernetic futures and everything, I'm like, when things are dark right now, it is something to look at in a future sense of just like, this is what we're working towards. We are working towards this future. There is a future at all. We're not just going to, this is not the end of it. This is not the end of the timeline. We're just going to wipe ourselves out.
Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
I think maybe it is kind of an idealistic look of just like, man, I am excited to have a future.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm excited to have a future at all, really. Yeah. So reaching towards that future is a big part of why I idealize that so much.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmo, have you ever been to, I have not gotten to go to it yet because it falls under, you know, it has fallen at the same time, but as a convention that I'm having
Level Up.
It falls during Level Up.
Yeah, Neotropolis.
Neotropolis.
I was just about to ask you.
I've been to Neotropolis.
Yes, I went last year, they have a kaiju bar. They have a Mega City block area. It's all neon, and it's smaller and intimate than Wasteland. Wasteland is huge, but Neotropolis is so small, and it's so, like, I'm talking about, like, the happiest, amazingest place on the world. Everyone's, like, lit up. Everyone's, like, they look like they came out of the game.
Looks like my wet dream.
Yes.
Like, Neotropolis, I've seen photos of it. It's funny because before that, people would be, like, trying to get me to go to, like, Wasteland and Burning Man. It's not quite my vibe.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'm just, like, we tell them, it's like, it'd be cooler with something like this, but, like, cyberpunk. And they're like,
There is.
You seen this? I look at it, it's like, oh, it's the exact thing I wish existed in my head.
Exactly.
Actually exists, and people are doing it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my best if it doesn't fall at the same time.
It's not. It's not. So this year it was like Viva Las Vegas, which is a whole, like, you know, pent up thing. Yeah. And then Level Up was happening at the same time and Neotropolis. That's why I went to Level Up, because I was a guest there. But like everybody else I knew were going to Neotropolis, like, you know, like Chrissy and like and everybody else. And I was like, damn. Like next year though, nothing. It doesn't interfere with anything.
Nice. I'm going then. No, Jen and I are going then. We literally had a hotel room already booked and like reserved and everything like that until Level Up got announced. So we are going this year.
Sweet. You can join our tribe. We have a faction.
I need to create a whole look, and obviously I'm gonna work on my costume now to be able to live out that future. I was like, I started DJing recently as well. I'm now dying to like, yeah, and all the DJ shit that I fucking am playing now is all like dark synth wave stuff.
Dude,
it fits that aesthetic. I need it.
Let me introduce you to Jarrett and Mabs. They're like the one that runs Wasteland and this, the same property. They're always looking for something like that.
Sick. We can totally make
that happen. You have enough credentials, you're like, oh yeah.
That was the cool thing. It's just like when you already have a fan base who's just hungry for anything you do. Mm-hmm. Subcultures, right? I spent for the first time, and it was me and Brandon Rogers DJed for the first time. We've never done it before.
Amazing.
And we finished the night off. So it was great, because it was just like, it's my first ever show, and there's like 500 people packed in the room who were just ready to dig into it. So it went great, because the audience was just ready for it. But I think it was really just about vibes for me. It was just like, okay, like I know the music that I want to fit the vibe, but it's like, what vibe do I want to fit this room? What do I want to, like, what kind of energy do I want this audience to absorb?
Yeah.
And that sort of aesthetic, that like dark synth wave cyberpunk, like you would hear this kind of music playing in Afterlife. If Afterlife was a night, like a happening like dance nightclub.
It's like the world of VNV Nation and like Covenant, all in one little room.
That's it's just like, I want to like just transport people when they're in that club. I want to just transport them into that sort of vibe and that sort of energy, just for that set alone.
Which I appreciate that you have. This is going to sound like an insult, but I mean it in the best way. That you have the forethought to be thinking about the audience and what they're going to take away from it.
Because how fucking dare you?
I think a lot of people, especially out here, I think a lot of people, especially out here, jump from thing to thing, and they don't really put thought into like, what am I putting out into the universe? And that's like what I love about you, is that like you're always thinking of like, what is the audience taking away from this? What am I giving? What energy am I putting towards it?
Well, here's the truth, is that like, you know, I mentioned earlier that I do all these other things for Spindle Horse. Like, I do merch, licensing, marketing, live events, working on the music and all of that. People think it's like, oh, are you really interested in this specific field? No, I'm actually not. What I'm interested in is giving an amazing experience to our fans in some sort of way. And this is all just part of that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that I would do merch and licensing for anything.
Right.
I do it for this fan base and for this sort of thing. I've gotten really good at it, not because of the technical knowledge I have about like the merchandise and licensing field. It's because I know our fans.
Right, right.
And I'm just looking for like how to build an experience for them. Mm-hmm. And I figured out like with merchandise, it's like, you know why our merchandise is so successful? Because we're not trying to shit out a product that is just trying to milk every last dime out of fans.
Yeah. Sorry. allergic reaction. Like,
excuse me.
You're right? Yeah. You okay over there?
Yeah. I have a Care Bear Gigapet cough.
There we go.
Coming out with something over there.
But no, I mean, here's the thing. A lot of projects do that.
They do.
Because I've talked to a lot of retailers, and what they're given is they're given like an asset pack. Mm-hmm. An asset pack is, here's the 20 images you can slap on 3,000 products. Mm. And I'm like, that is so disrespectful to your fan base to just... You don't care.
Yeah.
You wouldn't buy this. You don't think this is a good product. For me, it's like, you know, Hell of a Boss, my favorite collection we just released this year was we did a Pirates AU.
Oh,
it was nothing but the characters all redesigned in pirate looks with like lore thought out behind them and factions. They had different ships that the characters were split out on. Like IMP had a ship, all of the Sins except Mammon were on a ship, and then Mammon had his own ship that had glitz and glam and a bunch of robo fizzes on it.
Why was I not a part of this shoot?
Oh my god, it was so fun. But here's the thing, we released a ton of merch for it, and it did extremely well because fans are like, this is a fun concept.
Yeah. Right?
They bought the flags for the factions. They collected like the specific ship merch and everything.
Yep. Chompy.
I'm telling you. We went to Chompy and I went to the beach and shot all this merch while a seagull tore a crow apart in front of us.
Okay, so yes. I remember seeing this on social media.
I did see that, those evil
goddamn seagull I've never seen in my life.
I love it.
But that's the thing, is that it's not about merchandise. It's not about, like, you know, just creating a live event that milks money out of fans. Mm-hmm. It's right. about creating something that fans can indulge in and connect on for that. Yep. So, like, the merch is supposed to be just as exciting for the fans to talk about as the episodes themselves. Mm-hmm. And if it's not that, then you're not really offering anything to them. They already they already have a Blitz shirt.
They're already buying it from, like, Redbubble or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, well, also, Amazon. Like, our fans are so creative that they'll run circles around us if we don't up our game. Like, they're all coming up with good stuff. So, you know, we have, like, it'll be out by this episode. We have a horror-themed collection going on for Halloween this year that's all horror homages.
Yeah.
So, me, like, our animation director, Sky, creator Viv, like, Vivzy Pop, we all sat around and just assigned horror movies out to our characters, like who would be who. You know, we picked Glitz and Glam, who are twins. We had them represent Scream because there's always two serial killers. You know, we have you know, we have characters who are representing, like, specific slasher villains because it matches them, but we didn't randomly assign it. We put thought into it. It's like what fits this character in a way that's cool.
Question: any Hellraiser reference in there?
Possibly. Mm. Possibly.
No spoilers.
There's some good stuff in there. We had to say there's some films that people are gonna be wondering. I'm like, we need some for next year.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I feel like it's such a common sense thing to, like, create and, like, make things that obviously the fans are gonna be interested in. But I don't think a lot of brands are doing that right now. Like you said, it's just them kind of, like, slapping stuff out and putting things out just to, like, fill the need instead of really thinking of the audience. And I think that's why Spindle Horse has such a huge following, and it's only going to keep growing, is because it's obvious that, like, from the top, from Viv all the way down, everyone cares. Everyone cares about who's doing which character, what merch is going out, the music. Like, we were lucky enough to get Sam Hoft on this show.
Yeah.
And you can just tell that he loves writing music, and it's so hard to find people that care that much about their product. And I commend all of you for that, because it shows.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's important to remember that, like, we started in roots in which there was no guaranteed money in this at all.
Oh, yeah,
it was YouTube. It's just like, when I met Viv, these shows had not, like, fully taken off yet. The pilots had a ton of views on there, but, like, they have not reached the level they are now. And she offered me Sally, like, at my shitty old apartment. We had like, we went out and saw Birds of Prey together, and then we were back there, and she's like, you know, she said, hey, do you want to do a voice in the show? And I said, I'd love to. And she's like, you know, I asked her, it's like, what's the character? And she goes, I don't know yet. I'll let you know when I find something that, like, that's the right fit.
Yeah.
And then, like, months down the line, she came, you know, offered me Sally.
Wow.
But, you know, we didn't do this because we're just like, oh, we're gonna get rich.
Yeah.
We're gonna get rich off of this.
Right. No, right.
I mean, look, we're you know, most of the money that the show makes goes back into the show. Mm-hmm. That's why it looks better and better out after every episode. And we do that because we're making our dream show. Mm-hmm. Like, well and truly, we are making our dream show. So, like, the point of what we tried to do with this is happening. We get to make it.
Yeah.
And the more successful it is, the more we get to make another dream show, another thing like it, and continue building this up. But, you know, the fans take care of us more than anything else. It's like, the reason I do so many cons is because, you know, you're bound to see more people dressed as Fizzaroli than Spider-Man at a comic convention now.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. So, you know, for us, like, the dream of having a show that resonates with an audience at that level, and again, coming back to, like, me finding a cyberpunk world that I like to indulge myself in, these fans are doing so with Helliverse.
I was gonna say
they've got their OCs that they show up. Some people dress as their characters, some people just, like, dress as their OCs and indulge in it in that way. And it also sparks so much creativity. There's an aesthetic to Halliverse that people like to fit into their own lives and, yeah. and surround themselves with.
I was going to ask, are you potentially, like, you don't have to answer because this might be an NDA thing, but are you writing and pitching a cyberpunky kind of show eventually or an episode Hell?
Not for Hell of a Boss, no. But definitely in general.
Okay.
I would love to do a cyberpunk merch collection one day. That's definitely this AU was so successful with like the Pirates thing. That's definitely on my list of like, oh, I wanted like a cyberpunk collection. Like, but I did write on Hell of a Boss. I wrote an episode called Hell's Bells, which is the first of the shorts.
Yes, yes.
Which is my character Sally Mae's like big episode so far.
I didn't know you wrote.
I did. Yeah. Wow. Yes, I wrote Hell's Bells. They gave me complete creative freedom to write a Sally Mae short.
Wow.
And that's the one that I got to write that really built out her relationship with Millie and got to bring her to Imp City. And
it's
got
Millie
to show
time!
Her. It's Millie time!
So funny.
And, you know, we really got to explore more of her there. But, you know, that got to, you know, that was my first foray into writing for Hell of a. And then I got to, yeah, I get to write occasionally on other things. Like, I write all the ads where I get to include a character as, like, the narrator. You can call an IMP phone line right now. I had fun, like, just writing a short piece for that for Blitz and Moxie that you can, like, call a number and get the IMP phone line.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still do occasional stuff for that. But I've been a writer on other projects as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually... You know, I started in the industry in stop motion animation of all things.
Whoa!
I was an animation assistant on Robot Chicken.
Wow!
And Moral Oral.
No way!
Yes, like way back. Do you remember, if you know World Oral well, do you remember the little end animations like during the credits?
Yeah, okay, yes.
I did all of the ones for season 3.
Oh. Wow.
So I was up in Dino Stamatopoulos's office with like a little set like doing Oral's animations and everything. But then I went on to be a writer, like, you know, a writer's assistant on Frankenhole, the show that they did after that, and worked with them on that one. And then I created a pilot for Nickelodeon called By Request Pizza that I had Tara Strong and Nolan North and a bunch of people doing voices on. So I've done a lot of writing in the past, and now I'm doing a lot more like collaborative stuff. Everything with Brandon's very collaborative, so it gets your creative juices flowing. There's never a script on Brandon's set, usually.
Like, oh, really?
Or there is when you arrive, but not before. Like,
yeah.
You might get a script beforehand, but a lot of it is like the way Brandon shoots, and it's completely against everything I learned, but it works so well. Is like, you show up to set, you get on set, and it's just like, here's the scene, here's the line.
Yes.
And this is a method that freaks people out and freaked me the fuck out when I first started doing it. Like,
really?
My first project with him was Bryce, where I played Florence in this.
Okay.
And I was so used to getting the script like days in advance, getting off book, all that stuff.
Yep.
And I kept texting him like, is the script done? I haven't gotten a script, man. I have to be on set. And he's just like, it'll be done when it's done. Don't worry about it. Trust the process.
Okay.
And I got my favorite shit out of that.
It's the best.
Okay, so here's the difference in it. It's that I've gone on projects in which I've been completely over-rehearsed. And it's like, I drilled at this. I got off book. I said it a billion times through and through. And some of the stuff turned out well. And other things felt completely wooden. I couldn't get it out of my head the way that I'd already done it a dozen times.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. Brandon's stuff is by the gut. It's literally like, whatever your first gut instinct is for this scene, we'll try it a few different times. Mm. Oftentimes, the first take's the best one.
Yep. Well,
but usually, we don't have a lot of takes on it. We don't have a lot of time to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
So... you have to trust your instinct on that. And that forces you to be creative. That forces you in the moment. It's just like, if something makes sense in the moment, do it, try it. We'll either like, that worked, or let's try something different. We'll move on. Like I said, we're usually shooting where we're not supposed to be shooting. We have very
little
time.
You're in a
hurry. It's all on a string budget. So it's like, we need to get our shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it does get the creative juices flowing in a way that... I've never experienced on a set before. Like, I've become such a better actress working with Brandon on this stuff than I ever did in school. Fuck school. Fuck acting school.
Yeah.
I'm half the stuff I'm really glad I learned, and the other half I'm so glad I forgot.
Yeah.
Wow, there you go.
Because you really do learn by doing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I think I got completely off track.
From great. Don't worry.
Talk about
cyberpunk and like writing stuff. How are you going to marry those together with like your acting and like your writing so much?
Here's the thing that I learned from Brandon's stuff. Like my thought was always, in order to do my own project, I need to like create a Kickstarter campaign or a GoFundMe and get like $1 million. Or it's just like, well, I need $100,000 at least to make something cool. I found out that's bullshit. My favorite shot I ever got with Brandon to this day is we shot it. Well, there's two that I can name. Like the first one's in Bryce, the first shot I ever got with Brandon. And that brought my passion for acting back. I was almost ready to quit at that point. I was doing a lot of creature stuff. For years, I was doing creature work where I was like underneath prosthetic makeup playing like the creatures in horror films and got like half a dozen sci-fi original films under my belt. And like, it was fun, but did nothing for me creatively.
Wow.
Like there's nowhere to go with it. Yeah. I look cool, but the makeup artist is the one really testing their artistry and doing unique things. I am just meant to sit there, get shit glued to me, and be scary from point A to point B because the director wants nothing more than that. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a prop. That's what you are. And at a certain point, I realized that I didn't even really classify myself as an actor anymore. I classified myself as a performer. Yeah. Like, and I was performing a task. That's what I was doing. Yeah. And it was, you know, I did a project that a lot of people would have killed for. I'm not going to say what it was.
No, but you're good.
A lot of people would have killed to, like, have done this character was, like, a legacy character. And I knocked it out in half a day. And then the director's just like, yeah, we're all done. You did it. Congratulations. You get paid for a full day, and you only got to be here for half of it. And I went home, and I'm like, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
Because I don't do it to be able to clock out early and collect a paycheck. I do it to be able to be challenged and feel like I brought something to the table. And I'm like, everyone was impressed by me. I didn't feel like I did anything.
Wow.
And then, you know, I just told myself, like, if I don't find the thing that makes me feel passionate again about acting, I will do something else. Because this industry is way too hard to do it if you're not enjoying it.
Yeah.
So when Brandon invited me to do Bryce, like, we shot at a really cool set at a place called, I think Cosmic Cube, I think is where we shot it. A lot of really cool sets there. But it was very cyberpunky looking set. It was all like lit up.
So you're all excited?
I was like, ooh, okay. I already love the aesthetic. This is perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like playing like this very sinister like office executive who's like a foil to like his Bryce Tank Thrust character.
Yeah.
And it was just a small set. I think there were like two PAs helping us who were like usual parts of Brandon's crew. I think it was like Austin and Liam who does his shooting. And then him as Bryce and me as this character, Florence. And with that many people on set, I'm like, okay, it costs to get this set, it's like 3 hours, was like $200 or something.
Yeah.
You know, something like that for the set.
There, yeah.
Show up with the camera equipment we already have, the lighting, you know, the lighting equipment they already own, which is getting cheaper and cheaper to get good lighting equipment.
Yep.
It used to cost a fortune. Now it's like much easier to get LED lights and be able to like transport them around and a decent camera. And during that, Liam Krug shot, Brandon held the boom mic and I acted. And then when it was Brandon's turn, we swapped. And then I held the boom mic for Brandon and got it.
That's how you do it.
But five people involved in getting one of the best looking shots I have on my reel. And similar to a shot in Class Acts, the big like emotional scene between my character Claire and Desmond that was shot in Vasquez Rocks. We used my car. It's like my Prius that I'm driving there. And it was me, Brandon, Liam, Jensen, and Blake Rozier. And we had like 15 minutes to get that. It was golden hour. We were going to get kicked out. But we just had a camera, the boom mic that was like capturing the audio. We jumped out of it, did our scene, did it again just for safety, knocked it out, and drove the fuck out.
Wow.
And after working with him on that, I'm like, I'm overthinking making the stuff. It's just like, just make the fucking thing. Go out there, find people who are equally passionate about this, have them help you. You'll help them with their thing when they want to make it. And just make the thing. Stop overthinking it. Stop thinking you need to sell it or convince a big streaming network to pick up your idea, to convince them or something like that. There are people, you know, I look at people and I'm like, all this thinking I'm doing about having to like create a pitch deck and try to raise money. Meanwhile, somebody like Brandon's going to be, they're going to finish three projects while I'm still considering how to start a Kickstarter for mine.
So
I do want to do a cyberpunk thing. And now I feel like I have a crew out here that I've like written a couple shorts that I feel are something very shootable within, like, I know where to shoot this. I know what set I can use. I know what people I have at my disposal who have their own talents that they can add to it.
I could probably get you Scum and Villainy, the one part that doesn't look like Star Wars.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, there's a few different parts. If you light it properly, it can look amazing.
Exactly.
And like, you know, that you can do so much with just good lighting and like a minimal amount of set dressing. I'm sure if I just like put a call out to my friends and said, hey, does anyone want to show up with every bit of like cyberpunk set dressing bullshit?
Yes.
They will show up to my place tomorrow with just crates of stuff to like completely deck a set out with, and then we can make the thing.
Keep me posted on that one. Yes, I would love that. I love those kind of projects.
That is the plan going into next year, to produce a lot more of my own content. Because I've been working with people who I'm like, Viv didn't wait for somebody to pick up her show. She just made it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then a streaming network came in, like Amazon. It was just like, well, this isn't a risk. This isn't a gamble. This is already massively successful.
Yeah.
And we're not going to try to reinvent this machine that you've built. It's like, help us make the machine bigger.
Yeah.
You've already proven it works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with Brandon's stuff. It's like, he didn't have an idea. And then it's like, I need to now go out to all these executives who I need to convince to understand what my audience already knows. He just made it, delivered it to them. And then the money comes in directly from the fans. We go to these conventions and they line up to get autographs and tell us how much they love the stuff.
Level Up was crazy. Yeah. I'm just like, oh my God, I know Martin. I know. Wait, hold on.
That's
you at the booth? Wait, what's all these people? I'm like, oh my God. It was so overwhelming.
I never would have expected that. It's just, and it's fans who also understand that they are the ones who are funding you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like we are able to do what we do because the fans love it so much that they're willing to pay us that we can just do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it baffles people. Yep. Like, these conventions are never expecting that this project is going to be bigger and get more attention than like them bringing in Marvel.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
That they never see that coming.
I mean, the next to you guys was like Sam Witwer down that way and some of the voice actors from like Star Wars, Clone Wars, and they had little lines. But then everybody from Hello Boss came out and it was like,
It's never in a bad way, but it's almost kind of like, you know, you get a little like, when it's you know,
it's
you're going up against like essentially like Hollywood celebrities now, and their lines are outdoing these celebrities because it's so different. It's different when you care about the fans.
And, you know, our fans aren't buying an autograph. Really, they're doing is they're buying a moment with us.
Yes,
that's what they're doing. The autograph is like, that's just a scrawl on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Like really, what it is almost a receipt of having met us.
Yeah,
like that's what
proof
it was.
Of
that's
purchase.
What proof of purchase. It's just like what I'm really doing. It's why I always do like selfies with purchase of an autograph because I know what they're there for. They're there to have a moment with me and talk with me for a bit. That's why I'm like, I need to make sure that I like make this special for each person who comes up. That's why they're there.
Jason David Frank, one of the original Power Rangers, would, after the con, he's like, when they're kicking everybody else out, he will like, oh, let's go outside, let's continue this, let's keep on going. He'll see everybody.
Aww.
And then go home.
My fantasy for like the reason that I want to get into like DJing more and do that sort of thing is that I want to do the after parties at the cons.
Yeah.
It's like okay, I'm at the con. You want an experience with me? I can give you something way cooler than just shaking my hand and getting a selfie with me in line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me throw you a party.
Yeah.
Let me like come to the after party and let me like give you an experience from like city to city.
I love that. That's amazing. Yeah. I actually used to work for the Walt Disney World Company, and I used to be like one of their entertainers without getting myself in too much trouble. But that's one thing I wish that they would have put more emphasis on. And I've heard through other people that work for the company now that it's still the same. Is that we would do these meet and greet moments where, like, they would wait all year, save up all their money to, like, meet their favorite princess or their favorite character. And it was kind of on us as performers to give them this quality interaction, but in under 30 seconds. So we were trained like robots to, like, leave our spot, grab them, bring them to spot, talk to them, sign their book, pose for the photo, and walk them away. And that was one of my least favorite parts of having that job, was because, like, I was lucky enough to play or to be friends with somebody who was more outgoing and spontaneous and exciting. And I would always get notes that I was never going fast enough. It was like, you have to go faster. You have to move them on to the next thing. And I'm see, like,
that's,
why?
That's rough. Because it's like, look, I get a lot of fans from at my booths, mm-hmm. who, because of my type of representation, mm-hmm. which is in rare, because it's like, it's not only hard to find, like, trans celebrities at these conventions, and I know it because I've never done a con with another one.
Wow, really?
No, I've done only one, and I did Jessie James Growl, who's like, she's another voice actress, mm-hmm. she's only about, you know, she's done a few, you know, like a bunch of anime stuff, but okay, it's only been one in a collection of, like, dozens and dozens. Mm-hmm. And even more so than that, it's like a raunchy trans actress, a comedic one, somebody with, like, my specific style of mm-hmm. everything. And the amount of fans I have coming up to me who tell me that I'm the reason they came out, mm. I'm the reason they discovered that they're queer or trans, or maybe there's a person in their life that who's trans, who they've been able to, like, connect with more because they've discovered my work. Mm-hmm. So many of the people who come to my booth share that story with me, mm. and you can't rush that.
No. Absolutely, like, you not. Can't
rush that.
No.
I have fans who, like, come up and they're, like, in tears, like, kind of telling me these things. Some people who've come out to me, and I'm the first person they've ever come out to, and, like, that's why it's like, you know, a fan who needs a hug or something like that after doing that, like, I'm not only giving them a hug, I'm hugging them until they let go.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know that's like, look, no, I'm not just gonna push you through this line. This is a moment that is extremely important and could potentially be important for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. this could be a pivotal moment in your journey and discovery. Yeah. And, like, I understand that. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important that I spend my time with each one of them, because I'm like, you're not just you're one of many people I'm seeing today, but I am, like, your reason for being here. Mm-hmm. I'm your reason for coming to this convention, and I'm going to treat you like you are the only person at this convention yep. right now, and take that time with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen Dare do that too with some of her fans, and then I love it when, like, mm-hmm. that happens to me too at conventions. It's just like, this is the personal moment.
Well, it's why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah. That's it. And I'm in a unique position where I grew up with an autistic brother, and I also now have a sibling that is transgender. So it's like, I now have seen both sides of the coin, where it's like, and I also have dyslexia. So I have a reading, writing, comprehension disability. So it's like, I know what it's like to be called stupid. And I know what it's like to see my brother be called stupid. And, you know, like, I've been in that. So it's like, I have a little bit more patience, understanding. I don't know what the right word for it is, but, like,
compassion?
Know, yeah, you can't teach that to these big corporations that make these shows and that are just, you know, spitting out things to spit things out. It's like, when you have that experience, you'll never forget it. And that's what's important to pass on to fans and to people, is that, like, you just want to be treated with respect and with time, and that, like, this person cares about you as much as you care about them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know?
No,
so
one of the big things for me is, like, the kids. Like, mm-hmm. kids who come up to the booth and everything, which, by the way, I'm not going to judge why you are watching our show.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
I will say, my character, Sally is, other than the implication that, like, every other character on the show, she's killed things. But
yeah.
My character, she's one of the more wholesome characters. She doesn't really have negative things about her. But here's the thing. Like, I'm not going to judge that because of the things that I watched when I was a kid. But what I will say is that, like, I'll have kids who come onto my booth who, like, just tell me how much they love me, love my work and everything else. And they'll say, it's like, I'm so sorry, I don't have any money to buy anything. I always hook them up with something for free.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, and I'm just like, and, you know, I'll have my handler who will just tell me, it's like, oh, that was so nice to, like, sign their pass or do something like that for them. And I'm like, I just made a fan for life.
Yeah.
Like, yep. Like, I know that if I was that kid and I went up to somebody who I looked up to in that way, mm-hmm. whether or not that person was kind to me or mean to me mm-hmm. is going to change me as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, you never and forget the way people make you feel. Yeah.
Completely, especially mm-hmm. at that age. Yeah. So it's just like, I have an opportunity to give this younger fan a positive experience that they're going to remember mm-hmm. and like reflect kindness to them. It's just like that is going to change them in their formative years if that's what they walked away from. If I'm a bitch to them, trust yeah. that is going to change them.
For
that
sure.
is going to change them as a person. Mm-hmm. So it's like I feel the responsibility there. I feel the weight of that. It's like, no, yeah. this is an important moment for them, mm-hmm. and I'm going to treat it as an important moment.
Well, speaking of important moments, we're actually going to take this over to Patreon. So for those of you that are on there, we get to ask some amazing questions to you.
Fire away. I'm ready.
So we'll take it on over to Patreon. Be sure to check us out over there. Basically, all the tiers that are there contribute to our show. We're going to be getting new lights. We're going to gut the studio. We're going to kind of redesign everything probably November, December-ish. Ooh, so thank you all.
Exciting.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Our microphones are... they're working, but can't wait for an upgrade. But where can everybody find you on social media?
Oh, it's my name everywhere. I'm especially active on Instagram. So it's just Morgana Ignis, all one word on Instagram. Active on Blue Sky. Not active on the other one.
Yeah.
But very, very active on Instagram and Blue Sky. So find me on those.
Do you do TikTok too?
Not as much as I should.
Gotcha.
I'm had a couple videos pop up recently, so maybe I'll get more busy on those.
Okay. And also, where can you find Cosmo on the interwebs?
The Cosmo Network, the Cosmo Show. We are back. We are large. We're having a good time. Yes. I'm just petting this face hugger. He's dead now.
So. Oh no! Aww. Did you give birth?
Not yet. All right.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yep.
Well, on that note, everybody, be sure to stay Delulu because it's the Salulu. Bye. Don't go anywhere. We're going to Patreon.